welcome once again to another exciting episode of Tales of Azeron.
Azeron!
Okay, I have no idea what happened with that one. I'm not going to be held responsible for the weird, shaky old man voice that appeared all of a sudden.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I thought it was you. Yeah, thanks a bunch for that. Anyways, this is Tales of Azeron, your lovely D&D podcast of a homebrew world where the experience points don't matter and no one can be resurrected from death. So, oh yeah, you guys didn't know that? Oh, I thought I told you that at the beginning of the outset.
Are you saying we never level? What?
No, milestones, just... hello.
Yeah.
Come on. Anyways, my name is Roberto, your dungeon master, and with me at the virtual table, as always, is Sirayath Aldedonnan, being played by Chelsea.
Yes. Hello.
Alden Wallaby, being played by Josue.
Oh, God, the trauma.
Cato Sturgis, being played by Aaron.
Hi. Yeah. Theme for this episode is absolutely that one song, Those Are People That Died. Love you, Johnny, or whatever, slit in the neck, I don't know.
And finally, to round out our group of misfits, we have Kira Ryder, being played by Jax.
Hello. Welcome to the trauma bond. We are all one now.
Wow. Okay, so let's give a little recap just to make sure that everyone knows what the trauma is about, I guess. Last episode, the party discovered that the creature they were hunting was actually Cato's mentor, Chasta, and her child, who had been cursed by the Winter Court royalty on a whim, which didn't sit well with the rest of the party. They were informed of this by the prince of the Winter Court, who found them in the aftermath of the group's battle with Chasta. After a verbal tete-a-tete by Sirayath, the prince, as a means of making it up to the party, gave them a head start to make their escape, and a promise not to hinder that escape. The party begrudgingly accepted and escaped the Feywild. Or have they? Let's find out right meow. There is darkness and space and time and wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, Jeremy-bear-me stuff going on in the background. And all of a sudden, you guys are back in what appears to be a forest.
Does it look familiar?
It does look familiar. It looks like your entry point of when you actually entered the Feywild. And looking back around, you see the shimmering veil start to dissipate and almost close itself off of the rest of the realm of existence that you guys are currently inhabiting.
Well, good riddance.
Hey, Kira, can you give me a roll of a d20 on the tower, please?
I love the tower.
Oh. That's really dramatic tower rolling music.
What's happening?
Don't worry about
we're
it.
Stuck
I just
in the time
I,
loop.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Welcome to Tales of Azeron.
Welcome to our trauma bond polycule. Wait, is that how the intro went? I don't know.
Oh, boy. Settle down over there.
But this has been familiar.
Kira, you feel a burning pain erupt from your arm, your shoulder, to be precise. And I need a con save from you, please.
I knew you were going to say that. Oh, on the tower, or am I just rolling it?
No, just roll it.
Okay. What do we got? Ooh, so good. I rolled a 20.
Did you know?
Plus two. It's 20. Ooh. 22.
Okay, all right.
I don't throw up.
You don't throw up. You don't throw up. But the pain is intense. It's burning. It feels like It feels like something is ripping out of your shoulder at the moment. And if it weren't for the amount of pain that you felt throughout your life and kind of accepted, this would bring you to your knees. Everyone else can see just Kira almost lock up and just grit their teeth and hold back something that has no words for how guttural it might sound if they actually let it out.
Alden.
Alden. Yeah, Kira, are you okay? Alden kind of walks up to her.
I'm okay. Does it ease or is it just like still going?
It's still going.
Okay.
It literally feels like something is trying to rip its way out of your shoulder.
Okay. I rub my ring so that Betsy will appear.
Betsy pops up.
Okay. I'm just going to like,
you.
I'm just going to like lean against her for a moment and just like breathe.
Betsy's kind of freaking out.
Okay. It's okay. Just going to take a minute.
Yeah, yeah. Take as long as you need. Like sit down. Like,
yeah.
Breathe. Just
she clutches her shoulder and just kind of like, just maybe sinks down, still kind of like leaning against Betsy's leg.
You clutch your shoulder and immediately it starts to hurt even more. It's now like a throbbing pain that's coming out of your shoulder. I need you to give me another con save, please.
Alden.
At a disadvantage, please.
Alden, not knowing exactly what's going on, but seeing her pain, assumes that she's wounded. So he's going to just cast a quick cure wounds on her.
Okay.
As Soraya watches on in suspicion.
So, I rolled a 1.
Okay.
And a 3. So,
oh, nice.
You know, I feel great about all that.
So, Kira bites the bullet and immediately lets out a blood-curdling scream, howling in pain, and she blacks out.
Cool.
That's not okay. No, according to my definition.
The good news is I called my horse before I passed out, so now there's a horse here. Nailed it.
Face down in the dirt. Like, so I was like, that's not
like
okay.
Like the sand-eating beach kid, like, nailed it right there.
Yeah. So are we saying that Kira, like, cast Betsy's floating disc, or?
No, we're not. We're saying that Betsy is there, and Betsy's, like, looking around, like, hooves in the air, like, what? What? What?
Alden immediately goes and tends to Kira, like, tries to kind of, like, put her in a position where if she starts to shake or anything, just kind of make sure she's not wounded. If she's not wounded, sit her upright, get a little bit of water, washcloth, like put it on her, on the forehead.
Do you try to take my armor off?
Not immediately, because I don't know what's going on, but I do a quick examination in case there's any blood or anything.
Give me a medicine check there, Alden.
Okay. Let me see. Medicine. I got a 6 plus my bonuses, a 12.
Nice. So you don't notice anything out of sorts. There's doesn't appear to be any broken bones or anything like that. But you do notice the enormous beads of sweat that are at Kira's brow. And she feels extremely hot.
Does anybody have anything to help her cool her down? I'll try to do what I can over to Kira and Soraya, and at the same time, I'm going to, again, not knowing what's going on, I'm going to try to cast Lesser Restoration and see if it's like a poison or something that might have been crossing through.
I don't want to be that person at that moment in time, but are you remembering that little tidbit of information with the Winter Prince? talking about the secret power that Kira held, and now the portal, it's gone, and there's just like a lot of shifting energies around. As Soraya's like pulls out the water skin and like gets like a clean cloth, like a secondary thought, like, yes, I'm assisting you picking things to be nice about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do remember that. I don't know if this is what it is, but we have to find a way to at least like, stabilize her. I don't know what's going on. Do you see anything weird?
Well, do you remember that one night in prison? Soraya, like, looks over at Kato, like, when I asked if she had a shoulder injury, and then she clutches her shoulder and falls to the ground dramatically after touching her shoulder anxiously when Prince mentions it. There's a lot of clues here. You're casting lots of spells and nothing seems to be working.
No, thank you for bringing that up. I did not remember that. And as soon as Soraya says that, I start looking taking a look at the shoulder. I do take off the armor, at least like the top portion, kind of see if there's anything wrong there.
So, Alden, as Soraya mentions that, you know, you're casting all of these spells and nothing seems to happen. You, for your, I wouldn't say your first moment, but for the first time in a long time, you feel absolutely powerless. This power that you have, that you've used to help and heal and make sure that people stay hale and hearty, is doing nothing. A whole lot of nothing right now.
Yeah, that's my life. I mean, nothing new. I'm always powerless.
So zen. It's just like, yes, this is life. This is existence. Mm-hmm.
You start to try and remove the armor. It's buckled in pretty well. You actually don't know how to remove it because you've not tried on this kind of armor before. It seems that this armor was specially crafted for Kira. And thus, you know, it being specialized, you don't have an idea of how to take it off properly. But someone shows up just right then and there with a group of three others. And they're all men in wolf's clothing.
Ah, it was the scream, wasn't it? The pained scream.
Yes. Yes, that would be what led us here.
Understandable.
Are you okay? Were you successful?
Yes, but right now we got a more important things. If we need help.
What seems to be wrong with them?
Don't know. We need to. I'm trying to check and see. There seems to be maybe something wrong with the shoulder. I'm trying to remove the armor, but I can't. I don't know. I don't want to do this here, but do you have a camp? Or how far is your camp?
Come. They start to lead you away from the area that you guys are on. They place Kira on Betsy, and Betsy starts walking along with you guys, and you guys follow. Kira.
Yeah.
Are you about to say something?
Just don't forget Trasta and her son.
I probably would have thrown the son on Betsy too.
Okay.
Was Kira the one who grabbed the hand of the one kid?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
It is on her personage.
Hmm.
So they start taking you guys over there. Kira.
Hmm.
You are waking up and you go to the basin and start to wash your face, and the face that is looking back at you in the mirror is not your face.
Mm.
It is the face of a bold, brave, and lusty young man, a soldier. Mm. The look on his face is one of concern as he looks back. And you see a beautiful young maiden who seems to be on their deathbed.
Oh, no.
She calls to you. Please, we must go.
Go where?
We have to find the cave. The cave in the forest. Where the legendary healing waters are.
Do I feel like I... Like, how dreamlike is this? Do I feel like I am just going to kind of go along with it? Or is there, like, some part of me that's like, this is not where I belong? I don't know you.
Right. As you start to question those things, kind of like the thoughts just flood in of who you are and who this person is to you. And you are Anton Rothschild, a brave hero. Oh. And this person is the princess of the kingdom of Kyber. A person whom you love very dearly and would do anything for.
Okay. Well, my lady, if healing waters you need, then to the healing waters we shall go. Is there a horse to saddle?
There is a young, a very young looking horse. Familiar looking horse that comes by as you go outside and, you know, puts the young princess on.
Great. Do I know the horse's name?
You do.
Okay.
The horse's name is Betsy.
Yes. Okay.
Betsy I'm looks cool. at you like, where are we going?
To the forest? Is there a name to the forest? Just forest?
You know it as the Cursed Forest.
Cursed Forest. Oh, I love going to cursed forests. Seems like a good idea. All right.
You guys travel forward.
Yeah.
You feel the princess's grip get very weak as she holds on to you as you guys are racing towards this cursed forest. You guys get to the forest, the entrance of the forest, and the brush is too thick for you to go with Betsy.
I take her in my, what I assume to be very manly and strong arms.
The manliest and strongliest arms yes. that you could possibly have.
Great. But gently cradle
yes.
her.
And the gentliest hands as well.
So, sword. Cut my way through the brush.
The swordliest sword cuts through
swordliest
the brush.
Sword! Yes!
It's almost as if this sword was specifically made to cut through brush.
Excellent. Good. That's and weird else. That somebody would have made a sword like that. I feel like I should have brought an axe for this situation, but it's all right. Here we go.
You guys keep on making your way through the forest. You encounter rogues and vagabonds and cut them down ever so quickly just so that you can get your beloved to this fabled cave. And finally, you find what supposedly is this cave after stepping through what seems to be shimmering space into this opening of the forest. And you find this cave. And just as you step over into its threshold, you hear, I can't anymore, Anton. I can't make it. I don't have anything left. I'm sorry, my love.
We've just made it, though. Just hold on a little bit longer. The cave is here. No. Oh, God.
Immediately. Just like... Almost as if there's nothing that you could have done in this fever dream of yours.
Oh, God.
They die. The last words that they say to you, if only there was something that you could have done sooner. Ugh.
Wow. I look around. Is there a pool? Is the pool here that I was...
There is no pool.
There's no pool? God damn.
There's no pool, just the entrance to this cave. You feel hot tears stream down your cheeks.
I am upset. Do I have enough of Kira in me to like pray to Paylor? Like, can I...
I
assume that I would call out for help or just like shout.
You call out, you shout, you scream. What do you scream exactly? Do you say something?
Is there anyone there? Who can help me? Please, I'll do anything. Nana.
There's no answer to your cries. But you hear the darkness from the cave whisper back. Anything?
Yes. Anything. Name the price.
Oh, how interesting.
Can you save her? Please.
Anything. Would you give your life for her? Be marked for her? Stay by her side, giving life to her. And maybe just a little bit for myself as well.
Yes. Yes, I would stay by her side forever.
How long would you give of your life for her?
Forever. For all the life that I have to give. And all the lives I would ever give.
Well, that is mighty tempting. The wind blows and the trees seem to whisper and talk amongst themselves that are surrounding this meadowy area that leads into the cave, almost whispering like, no, stop, don't. Others going, yes, good, excellent. You hear it all going on. Let's see. Very well, but you must remember that this is what you wanted.
Yes, just save her.
Please, take your hand in hers and place it upon your heart.
Okay.
And then kiss her.
I do.
Immediately, you feel this fiery pain radiate from the palm of the chest. Like, her chest starts to glow, your chest starts to glow, and you feel the world go black. All of a sudden, you hear a vicious laughter as this black fire emanates from the shoulder. Of your shoulder, you feel this black fire emanate and just burn into your skin, and it engulfs it, and you black out.
Cool.
You wake up to hear a familiar voice. Anton, you did it. You saved me. You see the princess there. The sun shining through her golden hair. The birds chirping.
My love, you're alive.
It's thanks to you. Are you okay?
I look at my shoulder.
You see that there is a thorned spider web that has been burned into your skin.
Does it like, is it like bleeding? Does it still hurt?
It doesn't hurt anymore. But as she puts her hand out to you, you see that she also has a marking on her hand.
I take her hand and like look to make sure she's not like bleeding or anything.
She's bleeding, but she has what appears to be also a thorned spider web that wraps around the back of her hand and onto her wrists.
I'm all right. How do you feel?
I don't know. I feel full of life. I feel as if I can run large distances and leap over tall things. I feel like I could fly.
Well, I'll fly with you if you like.
She helps you up. And as she helps you up, man, you feel like a 50-year-old man getting up out of bed in the morning when you don't want to go to work because the boss is dragging you down.
I probably grown a little bit, but as long as she's okay.
She's okay. And, you know, for the most part, so are you. You guys live together and wed and have children, and you find that you can't be away from her for too long without causing some kind of pain to you and her. But it doesn't matter because you're never too far apart, always together. You have children and you die in each other's arms, living for each other. And then your children have children. And their children have marks on their bodies as well. The same places. The hand and wrist. And the shoulder. This eventually goes on for generations and generations, and people are split. Your family and the princess's family, one serving the other, protecting the other, always staying nearby for fear of the curse taking hold. That is, until you were born. And your parents lied and said that you had died in childbirth, never meeting the prince that you were set to protect. You lived your life with a kind man named Greygarth.
Well, fucked that one up.
As you leave the history of your curse, you see something that you didn't expect to see. A grand library. And in this library, there is a book. And that book is entitled Harmonic Dissonance and You.
Can I touch the book?
You reach out for the book, and then your vision fades away. Sarayath, Alden, Cato, you guys return to the present, to the reality that you have been, you know, traveling in, and you arrive into Ashtok's village.
Hey.
You see people for business. You see Ashtok bring in Kira to one of the huts and lay them down. You see him go get a medicine woman who comes in and starts to try and treat their fever.
Alden will stay with the medicine woman and Kira and hopefully together find a way to remove or unbuckle, even if it's not the entire thing, or at least like open up the shoulder area and just try to look for, see what's going on. Like if I can't get anything out, I'll try to get Ashtok or somebody who might know a little bit more about armors.
Ashtok and, you know, the medicine woman and everyone there are trying to find out how to undo this armor. And you succeed in undoing this armor, and you see the shoulder blade, and you see this, what appears to be a birthmark of some kind. And it looks to appear as if it is a spider web of some kind with thorns protruding out of it. And as you're taking a look at it, you can see that it, the birthmark looks like it's actually trying to get out of the skin. You see that it's also appears to be almost wrapping around the arm and crushing it.
I'm going to slowly put my hand on Kira's shoulder near where the spider web is, and I'm going to, do I feel or detect, or does it do anything to me?
It doesn't do anything to you, no.
Okay. Does it feel warm? Am I coming from it?
Oh, yeah. There is hot, hot heat coming from it.
Okay.
And as you put your hand on it, Kira winces a little bit.
I remove my hand and I don't have anything else that I can do. I hold my symbol of Pelor and I actually bring it close to Kira as well. And I just do a little prayer while the medicine woman just kind of deals or kind of treats the fever.
Give me a religion check. There.
Okay. An 8 plus 2, which is a 10.
So you do that stuff and you feel almost like, you almost feel like Paylor's like, Sam, that's going to be a no for me, dog.
Yeah, nothing's going right. Again, feel powerless, can't do anything to help. I'll just talk to Kira and hopefully Kira can hear, is able to hear my voice and just, I'm able to kind of guide her, bring her back, or at least put her at ease.
Mm.
That's all I can do. Okay. I have nothing else if lesser restoration doesn't work.
You sit in this room with Kira. Sarayath Ashtok just kind of comes a little bit closer to you. Do not worry about your friend.
Ah, yes. Sarayath puts down the knife. Right. No, I appreciate your... This is an attempt at emotional and empathetic connection, right? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I appreciate this. I am going to go into a pouch that Kira has, and I'm going to not suggest cutting Kira open with a knife to remove it. Focus on things that I can do. So,
are you being sarcastic? Do you want us to cut into their arm?
I was considering it. But recently, I have learned that perhaps I should not reach for my blade quite so quickly. And on that note, I'm going to go to the pouch and retrieve an item which has been from the task that we vowed to complete. It is a grisly token, and I hope that there is no offense perceived, as I'm just going to get it. So Sarayath is going to go into Kira's pouches, which I assume have been set aside trying to tend to her, and retrieve the hand and give it two-handed to Ashtok and say that this was all that we were able to recover, though we performed rites for the rest. My deepest condolences.
A pall of sadness just washes over his face. Thank you for doing this. Were you able to take care of the creature?
It is a cold comfort to know that the creatures that were responsible for this, the persons who are not able to navigate their way out of a unfair curse, will not threaten your tribe again. But I do hope that, despite its bloody nature, that it provides a bedstone for you to stand on in surety.
I must prepare the rites for this child. Ashtok looks over at you, Kato. You have others with you. Would you like us to perform rites for them as well?
There is no need. We got it. They'll come with me.
He nods, makes his way out. You guys are there.
And then I miraculously wake up?
No.
No. Well, I tried.
Blade?
I'm so curious to see what would happen. Like, I can't. I don't think it's a good idea, but what could it hurt, right?
So your character no longer has two arms. And the curse has now moved over to the other arm.
I always figured Kato would be the one to lose his arm first.
Oh, no. I mean, if Sarayat's fiddling with the knife is making any one of their party nervous, then they will probably try and pick up on that. Studiously attempting to not be offensive in any capacity. And we'll try and sketch whatever tendons are being affected and bones, like a vivisected drawing of what they imagine Kira's birthmark is doing.
Okay. Kato?
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, I feel like if I saw Sarayath playing with the knife, I'd be like, so you trying to cut or is this just a nervous tick?
Well, the flipping is a nervous tick. It's something that I do when I'm thinking, but this is the blade that I used on cadavers in university. So I just, incisive surgery. Alden's more about the closing up. I'm more about the autopsies, but obviously Kira is still alive.
Yeah, so we're not...
No. Nope.
Okay.
Pulls out sketchbooks.
Like, if you want to flip a knife as a fidget toy, like, go for it. I just was making sure what the plan was.
No, fidgeting is unseemly.
Kira, you in your fever pitch of a dream that you have going on right now. You relive the night of the ball. You are dancing with, you don't know, is the prince. And doing, you know, the whole My Endless Love playing in the background while you're dancing here. And then you guys are taken out into the veranda, looking at the starry sky. Such wow, such romance.
It was very tender, as I remember it.
Super tender. Super tender.
It was Dashboard Confessional playing. Thank you.
And then the Black Parade comes in. And
no!
You remember the conversation that you had with him. And you replay it again. You know, it's funny. I don't know. I feel like I know you or something. Is that strange?
No. No, I feel the same.
That's good, because otherwise it would be very strange and weird. And yeah, so I'm glad that we're wearing these masks. There's just so much responsibility tied to who you are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just enjoy tonight.
I think I can do that.
Doesn't have to be anything more.
And you guys embrace and slowly your lips touch. And you, as an outsider, can see the moment of when this curse took hold on the prince. Right when your lips touched, you see a flash of light emanate from your shoulder, and under his gloved hand, you see this appear. And that's when he started convulsing. You wake up. You are in a dark room with a roaring fire, surrounded by your friends and what appears to be an old lady who is tending to your fever.
Does my shoulder hurt still? Or do I feel okay?
It still hurts, but not as bad as it did before.
Where am I?
Welcome back to the land of the living.
Are you okay?
Let's not use that word anymore. I don't believe that Kira has an accurate measure of what that means.
Are you doing much better than you were when you were convulsing and sweating?
I mean, I do suppose I deserved that. It's just never hurt that bad before. I assume I look down and see that, like, I'm not wearing armor and my shirt is off. Okay. Or however this is happening. The pain is manageable.
It's happened before.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I had the craziest dreams. I had wanted to tell you this about everything after Betsy, but then we had to jump through a portal and there were fairies and the things and just didn't seem the right time. I'm sorry for scaring everybody. It's never been this bad before. I think maybe not being in the right place, like, held it all. I don't know.
I think, yeah, just might have crossing may have triggered something. I don't know. I'm just glad you're back with us. I mean, for a moment, not that you're going to use it as an excuse to leave us, you know, but like you said, Alden's like very awkward, like he doesn't know what to say.
Sure. Yeah. I did think for a while that would be best to just leave. But, and that she looks at Sarayeth and like, but I think it good to give context, maybe an explanation, and then you can choose what you want to do. I'll tell you guys everything. But
are you ready to tell us everything right now? You just woke up.
Well, we should get Chasta back, right?
Like, don't get me wrong.
Are we back already, or where are we?
Kungar's village.
Ashdod's village.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Which
is Kungar here? Wait, no. Is Kungar here?
No. Why would he be here?
Was this his childhood home? Did you go see his childhood home?
What?
Oh, she's delusional.
Don't worry, it's the fever, Seraph. It's the fever.
You look a little worse, Sean.
Are you okay?
Peaky. I believe the word is peaky. Some water because of the fever. Let's hydrate you before we move on through the forest and go backwards.
Get ready, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, look, don't let me cut you off, by the way. Like, if you want to talk about this, like, clearly we're all, I think it's pretty clear we all care. Yes. But, you know, you feel free to tell us in your own time if you need.
But tell us with water. Water in your hand so you can drink it to hydrate.
Hmm.
I'm just going to go get that.
Sure. Why don't we get back to the village and we'll... I would feel better if we laid them to rest and then we'll talk.
Okay. Yeah, let's go. Let's get ready.
Ashtok comes back in. We have made our preparations to send off one of our own. You are welcome to stay and celebrate their life. We will have a feast and the ritual will occur.
You put him on ice for 10 days, right, Alden?
Well, no, I don't think I did, because that's a cleric necromancy. So
I thought you did it as a ritual.
The gentle repose was cast as
a ritual. Yeah.
You casted it as a ritual, I believe.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. It should be good for 10 days then. So, I mean, we've been here, what, maybe a day or two?
It will be for the night.
If you would like us there, then I believe that we can pay our respects as the people who bore their bones to their home. Mm-hmm. Would that be appropriate?
Yes.
Then I shall do so.
Very well.
Anyone he else?
Motions for you to come out.
Yeah.
I was going to do whatever everyone else wanted to do, so.
Yeah, you guys walk outside and you see people that are, you know, going about their business, but there is a very, very somber just fog that has fallen over this village. You know, people knew the child and they know that things are going to progress to the ritual and the feast at night. So people are preparing that. As it gets darker, the chief Ashtok comes over to you, Sarayath, and he says, "You are the scholar, yes?"
Sarayath nods slowly. "I do record things and research them. Yes.
I believe that Kungar mentioned this about you disagreeing with our rituals."
Kungar has taught me many things about the practice of interring bodies, and that the longevity that I see does not always compare to the weight of the present moment. So when I participate in this ritual, feel from me no ill will, intent, or judgment.
This ritual is different for children that have passed. We have taken what we could and we'll use the ashes to construct a vessel. They will be shot into the heavens where they will burn brightly for all of time.
Sarayath can't do much more than nod.
Seeing as you were the one that brought back the remains, it would be very honorable to participate in this ritual.
Is he looking at just Sarayath or like all of us? Okay, good. You got it, babe. You can do it.
You gotta, you know, sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do to get it good with your future father-in-law, right?
Please tell me that this is all shenanigans that you keep inside of your skulls.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That sounded like sarcasm.
I mean, Kim is vibing, like, positive, you can do it, girl, feelings. Just in, but silently. Just like, you got it. Okay.
Right. So after...
Silent yes, queens.
After the hair just, like, raises on Saraya's, like, scalp, they're just like... Inform me what I am to do, and I will do it in the best of my ability.
You will be firing this arrow into the sky.
Yes. I understand questions are not necessarily reflective of the seriousness and solemnness of the occasion, but is there a direct angle? Is there a timing? Is there any preparation, or do I just...
Oh, is just looking at you like your fascination.
So we're just going to... That kid right to the star.
Oh my God. When you do that little... sound, like, he just kind of like flinches for a second and then kind of collects himself. He hands you this arrow. It's a very intricately carved arrow that has what appears to be a small satchel attached to it with what appears to be a fuse sticking out of it. You will light this with fire and you will shoot it into the heavens.
Saraya?
I will do this. Yes, Alden.
I think, just to keep it simple, fire as high and as powerful as you can. I mean, it's meant to reach the heavens as far as you can shoot it. And I kind of look over to Ashtok to kind of see if he agrees.
He nods.
All right. I have a mechanics question. I don't know if this is, again, common with the questions. Sarayeth is an elf and should have proficiency in longbows, right? Mm-hmm. And longbows has almost quadruple the range of a short bow.
They are providing you with a longbow.
Right. Cool. Yes. Excellent. I will do this.
Okay.
You know, now that you mentioned that Sarayeth is proficient in longbows, has Alden ever noticed if Sarayeth, like one of their forearms is like much bigger or bulkier than the other?
No, they're ambidextrous.
Okay, so you shoot with both arms.
Yeah, because otherwise, how are you supposed to, you know, get the angles right? Okay. That's why the short bow. Anyway, But so is there music? There's no time. I'm just gonna shoot into the air with the longbow.
So he tells you like the intricacies of the ritual, which is, you know, music will be playing, and then at the end of the music, you will fire the bow and, you know, fire the arrow, let loose, and all that other stuff.
Wonderful. I am much reassured, and I carry this duty with honor.
Okay. So the rest of the evening, you know, people are preparing food. People are giving food, giving drink, playing music, dancing to appease the gods. And you guys have a feast at night to remember this child who passed. And the music starts playing, and Ashtok takes you over to the position where you are to fire this arrow. And he gets you set up. The music starts playing. Give me a roll. A shooting arrows roll. A pew, pew, pew roll. What'd you roll?
I rolled a natural 20.
Man, the dice gods giveth, huh?
I know, but they take it away so quickly.
They do.
So, Sarayeth... Sarayeth, with a presence of mind that channels their eldest sibling, Corianth, who is very skilled with a longbow, and many hours of complaining and watching them, has, by muscle memory and just watching for over, you know, years, stands up straight and has a cool collectedness and positions their body in a mimicry of their eldest sibling, who they revere very highly, and with all solemnity shoots the angle up, pulls back, and there's only a little bit of shake because they're not quite strong enough, but they hold it and they release it at the right time. Shoots off with the fire.
You do light the arrow. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Of course. With my tinder box. I have the sleight of hand. Go.
You let loose this arrow and it flies high into the sky. And the music just stops as it flies into the darkness. And then it explodes into a bright colors of green, blue, and yellow as this arrow, this soul of this child is sent into the heavens, and in their culture becomes a new star for them to see and admire. And as the lights fade away, we end our session here and move on to our next session, because, you know, we're doing the 1 hour episodes, or trying to do 1 hour episodes. So we're going to move on to our second episode, which, you know, you will hear hopefully, I don't know, maybe I think we'll release it at the same time, but just break it up into parts. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Cause we're still kind of figuring out what our time frames are for episodes and such. So, hold on, because there's more Tales of Azeron where that came.
Science.
Yes.
I did have a plan if I didn't light it, though. I had a prestidigitation, which still has a range of 30 feet, which is an instantaneous bonus action. So, just in case.